Welcome to the Footy Coach Podcast. My name is Jock, your host, and this is where we get on great footy guests to get their insights, their tips, tools, strategies they use throughout their coaching or playing days, and us as coaches, us as players can grab a hold of these tools, grab a hold of these strategies, apply them to our own games and help us take it up a notch and get to the next level. And this week's guest, super excited to have on a repeat guest, previously episode 40, which was nearly 3 years ago, June 2021 when that came out. And that is Steve Simons, previous senior head coach of the mighty Collingwood Magpies in the AFLW from 2019 to 2023, being senior coach in the Sandfall for Norwood, previous coach for over 20 years at state level and local level. And hey, great to get him back on. We really go into his current role now as leading his own business called Teams with Purpose, which focus on high-performance coaching, specializing in team performance, leadership, and team culture. So we dive in a heap of things during this chat, from culture and how that relates to football and things such as list decisions, keys to great leadership, keys to great high-performing teams, you know, high-performing teams that really admires and why that is. A coach outside of football or AFL football, they really likes how they go about it, and he discusses that why. We talk about some docos to have a look at that really helps in this space. We go into different phases of the game and specialising as coaches. Whole heap of things that relate from his current work and that of coaching and how that can help you. So I know you're going to love this episode. But just before we get stuck into this one, big shout out to everyone who is listening, no matter where you are. And thank you for passing on the good word of this podcast. We want every coach in the country to tune in and hopefully get something out of it, which out of 136 episodes, really hope that's the case. And that's why we do what we do here. So thank you for passing that on to your assistants, to junior coaches, senior coaches, other people in your area, up and coming people who want to get in the coaching pathways and career. It's a great place to be and great fun as a obviously hobby for many of us who do it week in, week out with our local team. So we love it and we want you to love it even more and do it better than ever. And that's why we do what we do. So thank you for tuning in. But that is, I think, enough out of me. Let's get stuck into episode 136 with Steve Simons. Welcome back to the show, Steve. Excited to have you on. We just mentioned you're on episode 40. I actually couldn't believe it. I scroll back through. It felt like not long ago we chatted and it was 3 years ago. So time goes quickly. But excited to have you on and really excited to venture into a new work that you're doing, particularly in the team performance, leadership and culture space. So could you talk to us a little bit about your new venture called Teams with Purpose and what that's all about?
Yeah, great. You're right. 3 years since I was last on, and time just goes so quickly. So in that time, I'm now sort of stepped a little bit away from football, which I've been heavily involved with basically all my life. And I have now started to move into a different area where hopefully the skills and experience I've been able to gain during my time within footy, I can now transfer that out to the broader world, I guess, through both other sports, other football clubs, but also into the business side of things, where I believe the high performance from sport can transcend into the business really, really well. And hopefully some of the knowledge and experiences I've had on my journey, I've been able to relate to other businesses and hopefully be able to point them in the right direction of forming teams together and certainly trying to perform as a team. Teams is my passion, so hence why the name of Teams of Purpose. So whilst I still do a lot of mentoring one-on-one with a lot of individuals, I really have a focus towards the team aspect of getting team culture right, getting them cohesive and all pointing in the right direction.
Yeah, fantastic. And just for my own interest about it, in terms of the delivery of what you're trying to do, do you do that in person or how's that work from your end with it's like a sort of facilitating sort of situation, or how's that look from your end?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I guess When you do things like this, you've got to stick to your philosophy about what you're doing. So I've obviously got a very strong team philosophy. So what I've done is I've been able to network and connect up with a wide range of other consultants who are out there doing stuff individually. And what I do and trying to stick to with my team ethos is tapping alongside them to provide a service to businesses to help point them in the right direction. So a lot of those guys out there are already into businesses doing their bit of work, and they're looking for someone to come in with a bit of expertise towards how teams function and come together, and they lean on me to bring that expertise into to what they're doing. So I'm really enjoying it at the moment. We're still only in the early stages, but every time we do a session or I'm doing something, I really see the correlation between business and high performance sport and how they correlate so well. And I guess the journey of my experience, I've been able to put that in a slightly different way that people look at it from a slightly different angle, and that sort of transcends into a lot of business people who most of them have got interest in sport, so they can really relate to it in a lot of ways. So yeah, it's been really good.
I always find interesting with business teams, and you've got a product or a service you do, and you have a whole range of individuals who do different jobs. And I guess, whether you're the CEO or manager of a team, you don't necessarily have to be an expert in all these different roles, from HR to organizational skills to finance type things. And you can bring these people in. And I sort of relate that to a football environment. If you're a head coach of a local team or a state team, or let alone AFL, I guess you could fill out your coaching structure with coaches that can be experts in those different areas and make up for your deficiencies or areas of weakness for you. How does that sit with you and your thoughts and sort of relating the business world to the AFL coaching structure in particular?
100% agree with those comments. I don't know about you, but I still haven't seen the perfect world person in the world yet. The world's got billions of people on it, but I still have yet to meet the perfect person. So everyone's got different skills and experiences in different areas. And where I think what separates the really great leaders away from the other leaders is their ability to recognise their own strengths and know themselves really, really well. But then be able to fit the pieces around them where their strengths may not be as strong or their knowledge may not be as strong, and be able to capitalize on those aspects. So that's what I see the great leaders do, is they recognize where they need the support around them, and they then really that. And I like it too. If I put it back to a sport model, it's like your team might be losing clearances in football, for instance, because you've got no ruck. So in the preseason, you don't go and recruit a back pocket or etc. You actually go and recruit a ruck who's actually going to benefit your team and hopefully get some better performance out of that. So, and same as in business, if you've got someone who, if you might be someone who's even on the front desk who might be doing administrative work, you might have had someone there that might be inexperienced or might be struggling with all the workload there. You might go and recruit someone who actually expertises in that one area, and suddenly that helps your whole business function from one small pocket, which then transfers to the rest of your business. It's the same as a team bringing a ruck in. Suddenly that transfers to the rest of the team, and everyone else starts to back off that. And then your whole team dynamics and the way you do things slightly change.
One of the things I think, and I can talk from a personal experience, is trying to work out what your weaknesses are or what your things, your deficiencies are. Sometimes it's hard to recognize where you aren't strong is. I don't know if what your thoughts are regarding that. And if you do sort of see that a bit, how do you, as an individual, start to identify some areas that you might need some help in with, if it's not your strength to identify what they are, if that makes sense?
Yeah, well, it certainly does. So when I often go out and talk and mentor other individuals, the biggest fear they have is finding out about themselves. And in a lot of positions where people get appointed into leadership roles, organisations expect them to have all the answers, and that's why they're put into those roles. But the reality is, not everyone has all the answers, and there's never that perfect person. So they're always going to be weaker in some area and also stronger in some other areas. And I believe, and this is only my philosophy, is that organizations change leadership way, way too much when the person that they've got is actually really, really good for their culture and what they're actually doing and what they're actually in place, but they just may lack a couple of skills or exposure or experience in certain areas. Organizations would be much better to try and actually get people to come in and support those right people, because when you get the right people, they're hard to find. So you're better off persevering with those pains and then surrounding them with those people that can give them the support that you need. And that so that's sort of the angle that come from. My advice is for people that aren't strong in self-reflection or don't know how to go about it, is firstly, you have to be committed to facing the fear of knowing a bit about yourself. So that's the very first thing. If you're not willing to take on any information or to be able to go down that path for a start, you're basically not going to achieve anything anyway, because you're going to be stuck with your own mindset with what that occurs. So the best people around you to give you the best advice of who you are and how you go about things are your peers and the people that has generally seen you in your workplace or in your home life or wherever it is on a regular basis. So they can see the familiar patterns and behaviors and thoughts and attitudes that you present all the time. And if you can trust them with the information they give you, then they'll give you that information back and you can start to dissect that. Going to one person, you're going to get one person's ideas and views, which is great. Okay. Go to two people, suddenly you might have a slightly broader range than that, but you should start to see a common denominator start popping up. If you go to three people, then again, it gets a little bit broader, but again, you should start to see some regular patterns coming through. And what you should look at is looking at the regular patterns that come through from the people that you talk to and see if there's anything familiar and if there's a common occurrence that's surprising. And that's where you start to go, where your strengths are, where areas you might need to work on based on that feedback.
Yeah, no, that's really cool. But it is I think you're spot on. I think a lot of people probably do struggle with the thought of getting that feedback and not hearing what they want to hear. But I guess the importance of having that feedback is so crucial, isn't it, to developing and identifying things about yourself that you just can't quite see from your own point of view. I love
Jock,
to
there's, Jock, if I'm just expand on that a little bit, is I also think there's another element as well, is that leaders get put into their roles and what they're frightened is actually losing that role. So to show that they're somewhat vulnerable in a certain area to an organization that's appointed them into a role could be seen as basically saying, gee, I don't think I'm good enough for the job and you better get someone else. Whereas I think the strong organizations actually recognize the strengths of the individual and know they're not going to solve everything. And we'll work with that individual to move forward and take that pressure off them and actually encourage them to go to the areas that they need to get better or get support around, rather than just chopping and changing them and hope they can find someone that fits all their boxes.
Well, I always think of the example I have in terms of knowing oneself and not having the skills to do it all. Like you look at the great Steve Jobs, like the guy couldn't code, and that, you'd think that'd be a fundamental thing of what business he was in. The guy couldn't do it. So, and yet he's, touted as one of the greats of all time in the tech space. So, we don't really need to know it all. And I think that's as a relating it back to a coach, you don't have to have the super strengths across all forms of the game, whether you watch, you see the game really well, or you might be a really great relationship coach, or great manager of other coaches, all those different areas, technical side of the game and teaching the skills. There's a lot to it, isn't it? There's a lot of different coaches. You look in the AFL right now, there's a range of coaches, a lot different. Like Chris Scott's a lot different to Ross Lyon, for instance. There's just the big difference, isn't there, out there.
And I think you're finding, like, if you look at a lot of sports through America, through Europe, et cetera, a lot of coaches now are specializing in an area. So if you look at America with NFL, et cetera, it might be that they've made a name for themselves as a defensive coordinator or a defensive coach. And that's what they're employed for, is to look after that aspect for a team and inside that organization. And for Europe, you've got lots of that with the soccer and that aspect of it as well. And I think Australia, we're slowly getting towards that as well, where we're putting some really good people in as leaders in there who've got some really strong attributes that nearly tick all the boxes. And all good, the good organisations are now finding those other people to support them around that. And look, I've been very fortunate, obviously, to come out of the Collingwood program recently, which has been successful, and Craig's gone in there with a new lease of life of what he's brought in. But also, I think Craig's greatest strength was to bring a couple of people along around him who've had senior experience as well, in Justin Lepich and Bolts as well, Brendan Bolton, who can give him their experiences, share them with him, but also support him through his role as he takes on a head coach's job for the first time at that level. So I think his ability to be able to recognise that early on, that he was going to need the support in his initial stages, has certainly helped them form a very strong coaching team and panel together, and they work very, very effectively together.
The more time I spend, like I'm obviously in the VFL program now and been at Falcons for a few years in the Coats League, the more time I spend in as the higher you go in coaching, the realization how important picking your assistants are and having great team managers, having a great captain and all those people around you to make it all work. I just think if you can, if that skill, and I always have quoted on this podcast before, I think Barry Switzer, the old Oklahoma Cowboys coach, very successful in American football. He said one of his best skills was, selecting amazing assistants to help him out. And I think that's a huge skill, isn't it? And I don't need to tell you, you've coached at the elite level. The importance of getting that right. But if you go back to local football, the importance of getting your line coaches right is huge, isn't it?
It's the key. One person's message, you can't do it all yourself, and you need others around you to support you and helping deliver the message. And when you're dealing with, big numbers within trainings and across that, and particularly when you start getting to community level where it's part-time, and people have other commitments, and sometimes they can't get to every single training session and those type of things, to surround yourself with really good people who understand you. But also can help you, one, deliver your message, but also can give you the extra technical expertise so it can go around, because you can't get across everyone in that short space of time, is so important. And also the other aspect as well is that you've got to have people that get to know you. So again, we spoke a little bit about that self-reflection. Sometimes we as leaders can get so bogged in with what we're doing, we don't actually know how we're coming across and how we're actually delivering. So also having those people around you who can give you that little bit of feedback at the right time, to say, look, I think your body language over the last couple of weeks has changed a little bit, or the tone of what your delivery has changed a little bit, or are you looking at it from a different way to what we were initially looking at? Those people around you are so crucial to make sure that everything stays on the pathway that was set out for in advance, and slowly adjust as it goes along. So, that in somewhat some of those people sometimes more important than the actual leader.
Yeah, no doubt. I want to touch back on something you mentioned before regarding sort of specializing, like the American football and other international coaches specializing in an area of the game. Obviously, in our game, you have the three phases of football. Do you see that as a bigger thing going forward? You might be just an elite, say, contest coach and understand that to an absolute elite level, and you become a head coach with that in mind, and then you go and find. I go find, say, you, Steve, you're my offensive guy, and then you go find your defensive guy. That's sort of how it's really headed, do you think? And you sort of just really feel it. I know it's sort of almost there already, but do you think it's going to amplify more in that space?
100%. I think it's going to get stronger and stronger in that area. And I think it's not just from the tactical, because I think with sport, everyone straight away goes to the tactical component of the game and what they bring. But I've seen a lot of coaches that may not be great as far as standing up in front of a big group, as far as being a leader and inspiring people and stuff like that. But from a development point of view, one-on-one, they are absolutely outstanding, and that. And I look at someone like Brendan Bolton, for instance, who obviously went in head coach at Carlton, obviously did some stuff at Hawthorn, some really great stuff there. And I look at his pathway now, and since he's come out of being a head coach, like he's one of the best educators of the game that I've seen, the way he goes and breaks it down and actually passes that on. And he's really got a real expertise with his teaching background of being able to do that. And when you sit back and watch how he puts it together and frames it all and hooks everything back to something, it's really, really interesting to see how he does it. And he's making a real expertise in that area, and he's made that through his whole career. So whilst he only had a short time as a head coach's role, his expertise has certainly passed off into other areas, and he's certainly extremely valuable in that. And often, particularly with a lot of female coaches are coming through, and I've done a lot of mentoring with as they try and make their way into coaching in that as well at the moment, is sometimes they all have aspirations of being a coach, but they think of the coach as just being the head coach all the time. And some of the ones I talk to actually enjoy doing the development stuff more than the other stuff. And so I try and steer them in that direction where they're getting their stimulation from doing the stuff that they actually really enjoy, because it takes a certain person to have the patience and ability to be able to connect with an individual to do the development aspect in that as well. And that it takes a certain people to understand how to read a game and understand the tactical component. It takes a certain person to understand the physical side of the game in that as well. So I think individuals specializing in certain areas are certainly the way it's going to go. And I think both head leaders and also organizations need to be more open to that situation unfolding as well.
Yeah, no, I've definitely seen that up close down here at the Cats. As you know, there's a couple of individuals sort of have not the head coach who have, you know, I can see major roles within the program. And, you know, I'll happily say, you know, Nigel Appin's one of them down here. Just the way he goes about it is, you know, you can just see straight away the impact he's has on the club down there, and there's a number of others. But it is fascinating. The other thing I would love to chat in and talk to you about is culture. And I always think of like list decisions as well, and how that all aligns. Could you speak to the listeners out there? And that, again, that might be state football or Coates or you know, local football, but just aligning your culture with when you're deciding to bring players in or let players go, and how that sort of thought process works for you, and what your guidance would be around that space.
Yeah, look, the game's all about people. So whether it's the skills they bring, the personality or character they bring, there's either one of the things that they bring to the table. So obviously, when you're recruiting, whether that's a player, whether it's a new member in staff to a business, etc., like that, you've got to have a pretty clear vision of what your current team looks like and how it operates and how it performs. And the new persons or persons coming in have to fit the vision of where you want that team or that operations to be able to head in that direction. So one, they've got to fit the skill set and the experience side of things that you're looking for, but then also their personality and character also has to fit into that environment that you're going in. So for instance, having instances like from a career where you might be really, really struggling up forward as a to be able to score. So your first thing is I've got to go and try and find a full forward who's going to be able to kick goals and all that. And I think we all know that full forwards are very diverse characters, most of them, because they actually are goal kickers, and that what actually is what makes them what they are so valuable at. But sometimes you've got some great full forwards who fit straight into your team culture straight away, and the team thrives. But then you might have some others that may not fit that team culture and the same environment, the same personalities and characters, and the teams will always still continue to struggle, no matter if they're a great full forward or not. And I'm just using that as an example. I'm not trying to pigeonhole full forwards, but I'm trying to use that as an example that you've got to have the right dynamics of individuals coming into it. Otherwise, your team cohesion will change. Having said that, you also, if your team cohesion that you currently got isn't what everyone's comfortable with and doesn't look like it's strong or it's not heading in the right direction, bringing in certain individuals who will possess the direction that you want to go in could help transfer you and pass on to those other ones with the direction that you want to go in. I look at someone like Brisbane, for instance, where they got Luke Hodgin for his last couple of seasons as a player and then go into the coaching aspect. You know, Luke was an unbelievable captain at AFL level, but also unbelievable with the way he was with the program within his team and that, to then go up to Brisbane to help them with their early stages of going through and helping establish that, the mannerisms, the professionalism, all those things, the teachings on the field and that we've all seen and heard him being on the field, being mic'd up, directing on the field and stuff like that. There's no secret that that's why Brisbane has sort of been up there the last number of years, is because they've done the framework of the early yards and brought people in that fitted the environment they needed to or wanted to go to. And those people help them put that directions in place to get there.
Yeah, I always think of that. Like, I always love the idea of creating lists. Like, Tasmania obviously coming to the competition, and it fascinates me by how they set the culture from the get go. And I think you're spot on. Like, those guys who you sort of want to build a culture around, or replicate what they've sort of bring to the game, I think would be ideal the starting point for me, where you'd probably go and hire, even if they are 35 years old. Start there, and then, you know, you build young kids sort of coming in who sort of replicate that sort of culture. If you have a player who highly talented, always a situation, they're highly talented, but they're not quite meeting your culture, and it's ultimately probably not getting the best out of you, even though you sometimes think they are, because they're winning your games. But how do you manage that moment? You know, when you have a player like that who's highly talented, impacts big time, but then has some other stuff that you feel is not what you want to see within your club.
It's an interesting one. I had a wise old coach who gave myself a little bit of advice back in my early days, and he said, "You've got to have a match winner. Every team needs to have a match winner at some stage, and those match winners, obviously, at some stage, have other aspects that may not fit into that team environment. And that, but every team needs a match winner. So how do you manage that?" He said, "You're allowed to have one match winner. So inside a team, you're allowed to have one match winner because they can bring a skill set and something that no one else can do. But if you have two match winners who are exactly like that, they'll bounce off each other, and that then suddenly starts building a bigger environment where things don't start occurring the way they should, etc." So he always had a rule that once that match winner no longer is able to perform or provide that match winning effort, you then move them on and bring in the other match winner that you need. But as soon as you start getting more than one match winner that's outside the circle, then your team starts to fall away. So I've always had that in the back of my mind as I do things as well, is that you definitely need the X factor talent that comes in, but you can never do that at the expense of the culture and the long-term aspect of where your team's at. Talent always will take you to a certain level, okay? It will take you, will make you competitive, and it'll always make you to a certain level. But the champion organizations, the ones that are long-term success, have things in place that override and don't just rely on the talent anymore. They have systems in place, cultures in place that override the talent, and still you've got to have talent to be successful, but they become the common denominators that bring the best out of that talent.
Yeah, like a player comes to mind would be like Dusty Martin. You know, back 10 years ago, was having issues within the club, and then obviously he was the match winger that they stuck with and become the superstar that he was. I'm sure there would have been times back in the day where they would have had some real discussions about whether this guy's worth it, you know, like with all a few things he had going on, I think, at the
Now, having
time.
said that, Dusty's the individual that when individuals are inside an organisation for a period of time, they also learn and evolve to adjust to that. And like we've all seen where he's won the best on ground medal, Norm Smith, and that where he actually hasn't displayed it, he's put it away because he just wants to be seen as another member of the team and nothing beyond that team. So, there's skills that he's developed along the way, along his journey. As he's gone along. And then now young players coming into the Richmond, like Dusty's now one of the experienced players there. He's now passing that experience on that he's gone through to them. So it's a cycle. And yes, there's some extremely talented players that you will, or persons who you can probably never change. But a larger part, if they spend a longer time in an environment, will over time gradually evolve and gradually change to where you would like to see them.
With regards to leadership and picking, we talked about before the importance of getting the great people around you and therefore picking good captains. Could you talk about any pitfalls or things you maybe look out for to avoid when deciding on your captains or leadership group within your club?
Definitely commitment. Been in positions before where you've picked persons who you think are really right for what you're doing, and know that they can help you deliver your message and give you support, but haven't been able to be there regularly enough to contribute enough to make an impact. So whilst it's great to have a person there, you've got to make sure that they're also committed to buying into what your message is and delivering it in the same way, and also are going to support you in those times when you need to be able to do that. So commitment's a real, real strong one. They've got to know you really well, so they've got to be not in a position where they're frightened to speak to you or approach to you about anything. You should be able of what we are now, just have a general conversation where both parties will know that they can take the information on with no repercussions or hard feeling or anything like that. So that's the second thing, having that real strong connection between the head coach and assistants around and people supporting, whether that's a playing leader as well. And the third thing is being on the same page. So the message has to be alike. And look, the toughest part is, and I've done it myself, where being an assistant coach to a head coach, etc., you're going to have some different philosophies in different areas. That's just human nature because we've all had different experiences and we've all grown up in different ways in doing that. But understanding that when a head coach or the leader is trying to put something in place, everyone has to buy into that and everyone has to live and breathe what that person's trying to do. And we as assistants can offer little bits of suggestions and advice and that. But when the decision's been made and we're all in agreement to that decision, we've then got to commit to following through that decision and making sure that we keep in line with what the head person's wanting to put in place. And the players, having their input towards that and being a leader myself as a head person, having their input towards the direction we're going is so valuable because that's a faster way to get them buy-in is them having an input as well. With as a leader, I just go out there and just do it my way. Well, then, you might have a quarter of the people jump on board with you, but there's going to be 75% who have different philosophies and that. So to get everyone on board, you need to have their input, guide it through, and then make clear decisions from their input and what your philosophy is to get that direction going. So they're the three things that I would say.
I just read the book of Pete Carroll, Winning Time. I think it's called Winning Time. And he's former Seahawks coach in NFL and USC before that. And one of the first things he did when he was at USC, he told us the story of he got the players out. It's actually a late night session, I think, but he got the players out in the field and he had a big rope and he got to do a tug of war match. And so they're all half tees one side, half tees the other side, and they're going at it for a bit, going nowhere. Going as hard as I can. And then he just brought the simple philosophy of we all need to be pulling in the right direction if we had to move this rope anywhere. To go anywhere, we all need to go on the same way. And it's just a simple way of looking at it, isn't it? In terms of you need everyone in the organization pulling in the same direction to move where you want to go. If you have a few people pulling the other way, it just makes life very difficult.
Yeah, and I think the reality is, depending on your size of your group, of course, or your size of your team, I would say it's near impossible to have 100% individuals. You're always going to have a small percentage, however big that is, that will have a different philosophy and won't buy into whatever reason that whether they haven't got the time to commit in or don't believe in it or have other reasons for it. There's always a reason for that, but the greatest trick is to make sure the percentages are in your favor. And the larger majority who are driving things certainly believe in what you're doing. And, I'm a massive Ted Lasso fan.
Yes, great
And I
show.
always look at the believe word that's up on the wall, like that's the key ingredient to any successful team moving forward is to have everyone on the same page is you've got to believe in what you're doing. And that belief gives you the passion, gives you the drive, the energy, the cohesion of everything moving forward. So to be able to, as a leader, to be able to have a vision, sell that belief to everyone else, and then engage those individuals to help drive that belief and take ownership of that belief is probably one of the greatest secrets to leadership and why some people are great leaders and others are just good leaders.
Is there a leader, it could be business, sport, that you really admire? And why is that?
I love Ange Postecoglou at the moment. I've always admired Ange. Ange obviously has never played internationally or anything at the highest level from that point of view. He's played the game to a high level himself. But Ange has gone into a role, coaching role, where he's not frightened to do things his way and be different than anyone else. And he is extremely firm in his philosophy. And look, it's evolved over time, no doubt. But he sticks some real strong principles that have made him to what he was. No matter what the media or what the outside noise is, he's always stayed true with what he believes in and what he's putting in place and the way he manages people and connects with people. That's always been his framework all the way through. And I guess I can relate a little bit to his journey, having myself not ever played at the highest level, but being able to work my way through to the different levels as I've gone along as a coach. I can relate to the way he's gone about that and the hurdles he's had to face where people might have not given you the respect as you've gone along because you haven't done or played at the highest level and the battles you've had to do that. I see him, how he's done that, where he's just brushed it off and just stuck true with what he's doing. And at the end of the day, he's said no matter what he does, his coaching will always talk the way he does things. And I think the way he goes about it and, he's going through a bit of a trough at the moment, but the way the English press have been renowned for bringing down so many elite coaches and managers over there in the past, how some of them are actually embracing his philosophies and his freshness and how candid he is and how straight up he is. A lot of them are admiring him for and actually embracing that. So he's one that I certainly admire and follow, and I think it's fantastic for Australia to see someone like that go out and really put our country on the map and not frightened to be himself.
Yeah, he's been amazing, hasn't he? I actually personally haven't watched a heap of his stuff, but I do catch bits of it, and it's always pretty exceptional when you do listen to him. I listened to a podcast he was on with Howie on the Howie Games, and yeah, he's a pretty exceptional coach, and I think there's definitely a lot we could take away from him. You touched on something that is a big topic, I think, for a lot of us, and I'm similar. I haven't played AFL football, and you want to coach at a higher level. I had last year I had Josh on out of there from the afl.com.au Gablich in regards to he wrote an article about coaches and how it's sort of turning more people who haven't played at the AFL level who are now getting goes. Obviously one of the you coach yourself at AFLW as a senior coach in the AFL there's Chris Fagan and that. Do you see that increasing, I guess, as in time as the years tick by. Obviously, in sports around the world, it's more common. In AFL, we seem to probably have a bit more, I'd say, a bit more of stigma around that. What do you see in that space?
Yeah, look, I think it's slowly evolving. As per our discussion earlier on about how individuals are now starting to get selected basing on expertise, etc. So if I can say my journey of coming into the AFLW system as a head coach, for instance, is that I guess I built my reputation in South Australia of going in to programs that were struggling, putting programs together and resetting them. So obviously when the opportunity come up from for the Collingwood position, et cetera, my expertise was in resetting programs and implementing change. And the program prior wasn't successful. So I went in, and that was my leg in because I had expertise in one area, et cetera. And that got myself in there. And then from there, obviously ended up doing the role that I did. I see that occurring as lower level coaches now get more exposure to more information, more knowledge opportunities. And I look back at my time coaching and that, like, to go and get a mentor was basically frowned upon when I first started coaching 26 years ago. Like, you're supposed to know everything, and getting a mentor means that you're vulnerable and you don't know what you're doing. So you'd never go and ask for advice, et cetera, like that. So you had to find your own way and learn from observing other people, research, and all that type of stuff. Whereas now, mentoring is massively encouraged. In fact, I think a lot of people are still too stubborn to actually tap into mentors or coaches to support them. And I know a lot of people now who are actually now investing in and paying for coaches to actually help them through their job roles, and whether that's in a business or a club, et cetera, to help them to be able to perform their role to the best they can. So I'm a massive advocate for doing that. Hence why I'm trying to go down the path I am to be able to assist people to be able to do that side of things. So as that goes through, and as organizations look for specialized expertise, they may need someone who's unbelievable at implementing culture and unbelievable implementing connection within a club and that they might want to go to. A player at a highest level, they love the content. They understand the content really unbelievably well because they've lived and breathed it for so long. But they may lack in that ability to be able to bring together a group or to be able to bring connection in and those type of things. So it depends solely on the organisation. If an organisation is just looking for content, well, why wouldn't you go for the highest level? Because those people have lived and breathed it for so long and on a daily basis, and have been professionals in that. But if they're looking for more than content and looking to shape a program and stuff like that, then they're better off looking for other persons to have that expertise and then utilize those other people to bring in the specialists to bring in that content that they need to, where those individuals who are the leaders may not be so strong in.
Yeah, I guess back to our early conversation, I guess around hiring people, filling in your weaknesses, I guess, in terms of what you are as a coach. No, it's really cool. I think it's going to only get more prevalent, I think, in terms of having non-AFL playing backgrounds. I had a number of guests on this show who are coaching at high level now and are doing, really good things. So I think it's not going to stop. I think if you're a good coach, you're a good coach. And just because you can play the game, you might be a slightly quicker or slightly better ball skills, doesn't mean that translates much into coaching, I think. Like if you that's the reality of it, isn't it? From a good senior local player to a good AFL player, it's just they're a bit quicker, they're a bit jump a bit higher, little bit better kick, a little bit better skill, a little bit harder the contest, whatever you want to do it. It's pretty much that's it, isn't it?
Yeah, and look, if you look at, again, if you look at the States and the NFL or something like that, is that Bill Belichick, probably one of the greatest coaches worldwide that has been for a long time with with the Patriots for 20 odd years, and they were always up there. They had highs and lows, and if you look at the latest documentary Dynasty, which I recommend anyone to have a look at, and from a cultural point of view to look at how they did it over those 20 years. And yes, they had talent with someone like a Tom Brady, etc. there and that, but how the owner, the coach, and the best player all worked together, and they had their highs and lows, and sometimes they didn't even talk to each other, but still able to go out and perform, is amazing. But each one of them brought their own expertise into that organization and did their job. And that was Belichick's whole line was do your job. And Bill Belichick was never a high-level player, but he was there. And it's interesting if you compare Australia to the States and those sort of places. The States aren't frightened to have experienced coaches who continue on coaching until their 60s and their 70s and head roles, whereas Australia, we tend to go for younger people. But when I look at it, it takes a long time to develop the experiences and to have the, I wouldn't use the word failures, but the learnings from what you're doing over time to become a good head coach and leader and that. And sometimes I think we actually move people on or don't give people the opportunity when they're actually only just halfway through their learning experience and all the good stuff's still to come.
Yeah, it's quite amazing. I'll refer back to the book I've just finished on Pete Carroll. So in 2000 or 99, 2000, he just got fired from the Patriots. He was the coach before Bill Belichick. He had 3 seasons there. He did one brief season as head coach of the New York Jets, got fired from that job. And he got to year 2000, 26 years in the game. So he coached straight out of university as a graduate assistant in California there. And then finally sort of worked out his philosophy on coaching and long story short, from reading between the lines, he just found out who he is as a coach, put it all together after 26 years, and then went on a run in the college system, winning a couple of national championships and then won the Super Bowl with Seahawks and his next job after that. So took it a long time. And I think Australia, we just get caught up in real short, quick fix coaching, if you're not good in your first few years, it makes kind of like my club with Chris Scott, like he only did 3 years assistant and then become a head coach. Like it's quite amazing how he's been so successful, that so limited coaching before his senior role. So yeah, it can be done, but gee, I think the other way is really a good solid way too, isn't it, to get to know yourself for over those years and decades.
Oh, no doubt. I was fortunate enough to win my first few years of coaching as a 25-year-old. Win a few premierships in a row at a local level, and you think you're, fantastic coach. You've got all the success in that. And I now look 26 years down the track, and I look at the way I used to coach and the way I used to do things, and I sort of cringe. And even when I meet players I used to coach then back then, first thing I do is stick my hand out and say, "I'm so sorry about the coach I was back then." And
Yes,
even though
yes.
you won and you won premierships and that, like, I'm a completely evolved coach over the time, and it takes experiences and that. And I'm hoping now, moving into more of the business side of things, some of the skills I've gained from going through that will hopefully end up make myself a better coach, so all around I can help assist other people become better at what they're doing and coach them through that down a pathway. And I'm hoping in the next 10, 15 years I'm a hell of a better coach than what I am now.
And you look at big business, like most of the executives and top line managers, been in the business world for not only years, decades. They're in their 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, and still running big operations. And it's a long process, isn't it, of developing yourself and get that high echelon of performance. It doesn't just happen, over 12, 24 months, 5 years. I've got a friend who's in the stand-up comedy space, stand-up comic, I should say, and he's been doing it for a few years now, and he reckons he's only just getting started. Like it's just those guys who are doing it at the elite level have just been doing it for a long, long time. That's an artist or a craft like that. Very similar, isn't it? Just how long it takes.
I had a young female coach who was coming through the ranks and who I think is going to develop into a good coach down the track. But her first comment to me when she first reached out was, "What course did you do to get to your job?" And I responded back to it. I said, "I did the course of life."
Yep.
Everything you learn as you go along is that. So yes, you can get certificates and you can get insight to doing courses and that, which always brings added layers to what you're doing. But there's nothing like general life experience of doing what you're doing, watching to see how it happens, what are the effects of that occurring, and learning from that and adjusting things as you go along. I think life experiences is the number one way of learning, and then watching how other people go about it. Like I've just been blessed in my time at AFL level where I've been able to observe the best go around with what they're doing and actually watch how they go about it. And obviously my time in Melbourne, I've been very fortunate to be able to go in with other sports with your Melbourne Victories, your Melbourne Storms and all that, and Melbourne Rebels, and being able to watch how they go about things and pick up little bits. You go and watch their trainings and sit back and watch them, and sit, even just go and sit on the park bench and sit back and have a coffee and watch how they go about their trainings and all that.
Yep.
And you'll see so many similarities. Yes, the content and sport's slightly different, but the way they roll it out, the way they build culture in their teams, the way they do things are all exactly the same and very, very similar, and all have the same principles. So, just people's got to go out there and grow and be open to exploring other things and not just what you normally do.
Yeah, there's definitely from the theory to the actual practice of it, there's always a they go step, arm in arm towards what you're trying to do and getting better. But there's a disconnect, isn't there, between the theory and actually going out and doing it. And that's why the importance of actually doing what you are talking about and getting those experiences is so important. And just the theory, I think there's always it only goes so far, I guess, in terms of where it can take you from, whether it's listening to a podcast or reading a book or doing a course. The actual doing is where the real. Yeah, I think the majority of the learning is taking place.
Yeah, and look, obviously over my time I've been able to sit in local level coach appointments and sit on panels appointing coaches and that. And I've seen some fantastic people present and stuff like that and that. But the one thing I give a tip to most panels out there now is that once a person's demonstrated how they present, because I think them demonstrating how they present is really, really important, is halfway through actually shut their computer down. Turn it off and actually see the other content that they've got and how they can actually deliver it without using a PowerPoint slide to work from and stuff. Put them in the uncomfortable environment of having to project themselves
Yep.
around from questions they may not know or have rehearsed. Because again, there's a lot of good salespeople out there, but actually, have they got the true characteristics and content and experience to be able to deliver what you're looking for from your organisation? So I think one, it's very important to see that they've done the work and they've done the effort and how they present. I think that's a really, really important tool to look at. But once you get through that stage, yeah, put them under a bit of the pump and see if they can actually come off the cuff a little bit and see what responses you get.
Yeah, love that. I will fire a couple of questions for you, Steve, and I really appreciate you coming on the show. I talked about a leader you admired. Is there a team that you think's doing it really well? You really admire from afar and how the organization goes about it. And obviously, you've come from a really good one there at Collingwood. Is there anyone else you sort of see is doing it really well, and it could be business as well?
Yeah, look, there's a few, and obviously I've been fortunate to come out of the Collingwood program and that, but I always keep on coming back. Look, I've got a real fascination for dynasties,
Yep.
groups that have been successful for not just 1 year, 2 years, but for a substantial period of time. And that doesn't mean that they've won every year. I think a lot of people look at success as seeing the trophy in the trophy cabinet as the ultimate reward for success. I've seen some sort of organisations that the way they run things and that, and are probably one of the biggest in their field. And you sit there and go, say, yeah, well, you can do so much better if you actually did work on a few areas type thing.
Yep.
But I always come back to New England Patriots. Like, they did it over 20 years. Did they win every year? No. Were they a contender every year? Yes, they were. They went through some highs and lows, but to follow what they did and have all the hurdles, have all the media, have all the critics throw themselves, how they worked for that, how they worked through injuries through their best players, how they worked with a coach who was under siege and everyone wanted to sack him, and how they kept on backing him in, how the owner surrendered his side of ownership of selecting the team and that, and transferring that to the coach to have the say. There's just so many learnings out of it. And I couldn't recommend the documentary Dynasty enough. Because it's just got so much of a cultural aspect and high performance aspect in it that even if you're going just a small part of it out, it'll really put an organization or your own leadership in a completely different viewpoint. So they're the ones who fascinate me, to be ones who do it over a significant period of time. And you even go back, like I might be showing a bit of my age, but like I'll do a bit of research on even the Roman Empire and the British Empire and how they got to where they were and actually their failings along the way and actually how they actually are now only as that. So I look at something like the British Empire, for instance, who had such a large mass across the whole world at one stage, but now have a very small continent area where they actually live in and actually control now. So how things evolve over time is amazing. So yeah, anyone on New England Patriots, anyone who wants to do research on them, I strongly recommend.
Is the dynasty, is that where is that on, that on like, is that on Prime, or would that
I'm
be
not sure if
on?
that was on Stan or Apple Plus.
Okay.
I'll have to get back to you on that one.
Yeah, I have to check that out. It's I did watch the one Brady. I think he did the, how do you call it, the Brady, the 7 years they won the Super Bowl, or 6 years they won the Super Bowl. But yeah, no, that sounds like a beauty. Yeah, I think most listeners here would be all over that. Final question for you. If I could, and I asked you this question, I think last time, or 3 years ago when we had you on the show, but if I could give you a banner today that you could put up on coaches' doors that they're going to see day in, day out, what would you have that banner say in 2024?
2024, it's probably been the same one that I've had for a little while, and it's probably my motto currently with my coaching, and always has been, is potential into excellence. So I think everyone's got a talent and experience, etc., of some form in their life. It's how you turn that potential of that person into doing something that's actually excellent. So it's just something that, that's been my coaching journey all the way through, is that I haven't had actually aspirations to coach at a certain level. My whole mindset's been about doing my job or trying to be better at doing my job and become excellent towards that, because all the players that I've worked with and my staff that I've worked with, if I get better at what I'm doing, it's only going to benefit them. And that, so that's been my whole that. And even when I look, when you're looking at it, picking up and drafting a talented kid, you look at the potential in them, but I'm always looking down the path and say, okay, with that potential, if they bring that character, their skill traits in, their background, where could they actually be? And for me, that's what drives me, is can you turn that and get them into achieving excellence and getting the best out of themselves and that. So if I had that banner, that's what I'll put up.
Fantastic. If listeners wanted to reach out to you with your business there at Teams with Purpose, what's the best place to check your stuff out?
Yeah, just send an email on contacts at teamswithpurpose.com is usually the best way. And that, obviously, I've got a Facebook page. I'm obviously on LinkedIn as well. So feel free to reach out. I love talking coaching. I love talking any aspect of leadership, but I really, really love talking about team culture and teams. So anyone who wants to talk about teams, I'll talk all day with them. So yeah, anyone who feels free to want to reach out, happy to have a chat. So contacts at teamswithpurpose.com.
Fantastic, Steve. Well, really appreciate your time. Thank you for coming on the show again. We'll have to get you on in hopefully a shorter time frame than 3 years next time. But yeah, all the best with your work going forward, and look forward to speaking soon.
Thanks, Jock. Always enjoy it. Thank you.
Before you guys take off, we have the Footy Coach newsletter called A Few Handy Points. Comes out monthly, give you a bunch of recommendations and things that I'm checking out that I reckon is worth looking into, from books to documentaries to podcasts to different things we're doing here with the latest news and updates on camp schedules, memberships, and products and discounts. So check that out at thefootycoach.com.au. Simply whack your email into the box as it pops up, and we'll shoot that out to you monthly. Outside of that, we have many great guests continuing to roll into the show, and we'll keep this show rolling just for you wherever you are. Hope you're enjoying it. Hope you're enjoying your coaching. Hope you're enjoying your playing, and hoping you're getting after it. And hey, we'll look forward to speaking to you again on the show. Cheers.